The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 3. Downstairs. She wondered. Life can be really strange and surprising to you, she thought. From one second to the next, it suddenly takes you to the strangest places. One minute you're playing with your beloved child above the clouds, and a little annoyed that your husband is hunched over his laptop as usual, completely absorbed in his work. And then, all of a sudden, all of this ceases to exist. Flames burn around you. You are lying uncomfortably and strangely contorted on what will later be revealed to be part of the Learjet's landing gear. You try to move. You can't. You raise your arm. Somehow it works. You look at it in amazement. He looks strange. Smoldering smoke pours from his burned skin into the night sky, and it smells strongly of barbecue. The barbecue you were going to have this weekend. Well, that's probably not going to happen. Shit, you respond, croaking, preparing for the end of your strange and always surprising life. Beauty isn't everything, you know, Catherine Williams had said back then, and her awkward smile seemed a little too perfect. Well memorized, he thought to himself, but nodded his head. It was time to tighten the screw a bit. But isn't it exactly that kind of beauty that has made you and the other supermodels of the so-called Magnificent Seven earn about $70 million in the last year, Catherine? That's right, of course, she replied coolly, playing with her diamond bracelet. The interview seemed to bore her. My looks are my capital. And sometimes it can be tempting to lose sight of everyday life with the astronomical sums the other girls and I earn from it. He had to grin. She's ripe now, he thought. If beauty isn't everything, as you say, then you need to prepare for life after modeling. What are your plans? Do you want to start a family one day? She flinched slightly at the question. For the first time in their conversation, he felt her facade cracking. I'm not worried about that right now. Sure, one day I'd like to settle down. But for now, I'm enjoying my life as it is. Is this desire to enjoy life the reason you just broke up with your longtime childhood sweetheart? Excuse me? Her already pale face. It's probably from the coke. These bitches all snort coke. I know my way around, he flashed through his mind. She had lost all her color and now looked even more like a doll's head, devoid of any life, without a single spark of understanding. Pleased with his godlike journalistic skills, he clucked his tongue. Wait a minute, I've even got a name here. His name is Andy. Andy Peterson, psychology major at Yale. Isn't that right, Catherine? This conversation is over, she hissed. Stop! Hey, wait a minute, Catherine. It was just... Hey! The door slammed shut behind her. He was alone in the hotel room. He had to laugh. What a bitchy little... The phone ripped him out of his memories. Yes? He barked into the receiver. It was Charlie from the post office. When he'd first received his mail here at the Inquisitor, he'd thought the envelope might be filled with anthrax. But let's keep it real, Doug. With the kind of stories you write here at the National Inquisitor, the response would be a burning paper bag filled with shit on your porch as a threat. Or maybe a dead rat in a box. The days of grilling a celebrity like Catherine Williams are long gone. Annoyed, Charlie asked if he should send the mail up now. Yes, yes, of course. Send it up, Doug replied, lost in thought, and hung up. Then he went back to flipping through the folder of material on the Magnificent Seven that he had put together after the first letter had come to him. Those letters. Those damn letters. They could have been his ticket out of this hell. But now, all he really got was rats and shit. The two letters back then had always said the same thing. I'm alive. Written on the computer. Times font. Plain paper. At first he had thought someone in the newsroom was pulling a prank. But then the ticker announced that one of Magnificent Seven's supermodels had been found dead. Inez Diega, a racy beauty from Brazil. He immediately remembered that she had once given him a blowjob at a party in Milan, back in the good old days. Just like that. On a whim. No, Inez had never really been as bitchy as Williams. First, it was said that she and her boyfriend had died in a fire in the penthouse they shared on Fifth Avenue. Inez's boyfriend, an aspiring Hollywood star, had probably forgotten to put out his cigarette in bed at night. Ate logo and goodbye, as they say, on Sugarloaf Mountain. Rumor has it, however, that the cops did not believe it was an accident, especially the investigator in charge of the case, a certain Helen Louisiani, was convinced that something fishy was going on. Well, then the second letter arrived on Doug's desk. Soon after, the news broke that Mia Wong had been murdered. Snip, snap. Slick Victor Adams momentarily forgets earning millions, and instead expertly eviscerates his chink bitch. And that makes him so sad, so he kills himself. But good old Doug knew better, didn't he? He was just about to make it big with the story when some of his old NYPD connections tipped him off that the investigating detectives believed Victor Adams had also offed Diega and her boyfriend. Case closed. Well, so much for that. Damn, he was so close. This story was supposed to be his big comeback. Back in the saddle, cowboy. Yeah, that would have been it. The letters were probably just a figment of some busybody's sick imagination. Doug looked at them for a moment, then crumpled them up and tried to throw them in the paper basket. But the ball bounced off the rim and landed on the floor. Shit, he muttered, as Pete, the ever-sleepy messenger, tossed the mail onto his desk. Hey! Doug snapped at him. But the kid didn't even hear him, because his headphones were blasting K-pop at full volume. Tired, he bent down, picked up the crumpled letters, and put them in the trash. When he stood up again, he spotted a small envelope in his mail that looked familiar. His heart started beating faster. Shit, it could be. He fished the letter out of the pile. With trembling fingers, he tore it open. I'm alive, it said. Yes, he shouted, laughing. He read the sentence again, this time aloud. I am alive. Oh, I know exactly what you mean, buddy. He jumped up and ran to the editor's office. But halfway there, he turned around, went back to his seat, fished the first two letters out of the wastebasket, smoothed them out a bit, and then walked lightly back to the editor's office. Douglas Melvin was back in business. He was already working on a headline for the front page. He would have to change it if necessary. After all, he didn't know which of the remaining five bitches would get it next. Kings County Hospital in Brooklyn was one of five morgues in the New York metropolitan area. The county, as it was known, was a massive angular 19th century building. The wing that housed the coroner's office was in the winding basement of the main building and had little of the clean, bustling charm of the upper floors. Helen stepped from the brightly lit stairwell into the semi-dark hallway. The ceiling was vaulted and a little too low for Helen's taste. She didn't like being here. The stench of the countless dead who had passed through here for over 100 years seeped through the cracks in the dark red brick walls. Helen's footsteps echoed loudly on the dirty gray linoleum. She found herself thinking that the lonely sound made her walk faster. Finally, she reached the end of the hallway. She breathed a sigh of relief, pushed through the cross like a good soldier, and entered the pathology department. The pathologist at the morgue had called her. Brooklyn wasn't really her beat, but Helen had arranged for any model deaths in the New York area to be forwarded to her as part of the investigation. The clerk was short, stocky, and had a thick black goatee. He opened the cold room door and pulled out the steel gurney containing the body. As usual, The body was wrapped in semi-transparent plastic, which always reminded Helen of the shower scene in Psycho. The man obviously had a different association when he saw it. "And here we have TV dinner number 3, he said. "Excuse me?" Helen didn't understand what he meant. He grinned. "Don't you know those microwave burritos? They're really great." He pointed to the dead woman. "Looks just like that." "Really?" Helen snarled, looking at him icily. She had seen more than her share of dead bodies, but she still believed that every corpse should be treated with respect. "Hey, it's okay," he replied, leaving Helen alone with the body. She put on a new pair of gloves and opened the plastic bag. She couldn't get the pathologist's inappropriate remark out of her mind. TV dinner. The remark was actually apt. "Be honest, Helen. When was the last time you were deeply moved when you opened a bag like that? Do you remember?" It got hot. She was sweating. Had this room gotten any smaller? "Stop!" she shouted into the silence. She took a deep breath. The room receded. The panic attack was over as quickly as it had come. Good thing Davis hadn't noticed, she thought. She swallowed and looked at the dead woman. It was Anuradha Appala, a top Indian model known around the world as Anu. Her body, crushed from the fall, was found on the roof of an SUV. The concierge of the building was helping an old lady out of the car when Anu crashed onto the roof of the Mercedes. The old lady fell to the ground and broke her pelvis. The concierge escaped with the shock of his life. Anu, armed with a knife, had climbed onto the roof of her apartment building in Central Park, slashed her stomach, and then jumped. Just like that. Well, maybe not just like that. Helen examined the dead woman's stomach. It had indeed been slashed. But the pattern of this crime did not exactly match that of the two previous acts of violence. Inez Diega, Mia Wong, and Anu had only one thing in common. They had all been famous models. Helen tucked her hair behind her ear, something she always did when she was lost in thought. Very good. A different approach. Unlike the other two dead, Anu had inflicted her injuries on herself. But why? Why go to all that trouble? Why slash her stomach first and then jump? Maybe a ritual. The man with the goatee came back into the room and cleared his throat impatiently. "Are you done yet?" Helen sighed and was about to turn away from the dead woman when she noticed something that made her hesitate. "What are these cuts on the arms? Were they caused by the impact?" she asked him. The bearded man looked at the cuts intently and shrugged. "Possibly. But?" "Nothing but. Do you know when Dr. Boyle is coming to do the autopsy?" The man scratched his head. "Phew, I don't know. Well, after the barbecue in Crown Heights." By the barbecue, he probably meant the burning of a house full of illegal immigrants, Helen thought. She'd heard about it on the police scanner. 15 dead. No wonder Dr. Boyle, the head of the local coroner's office, wasn't here. She grimly wondered what Mr. Joker would call a body burned beyond recognition. Probably wieners on a stick. She tried to swallow her anger at the idiot. She examined the dead woman once more. The cuts on her forearms seemed more and more strange. Helen thought about it. "Could these cuts be from the knife?" she asked. The man bent reluctantly over the body again. "It's possible," he finally muttered. Helen rolled her eyes. "Jesus Christ, come on. Yes or no?" The man raised his hands in defense. "It's all right, okay? You mean like intentional self-harm?" He looked at the wounds again. "Yeah, it could be. Could really be." Helen stormed out, grabbed her cell phone, and dialed Davis's number. "Davis? God, the reception is terrible. We have to get to Anu's crime scene. I don't think the case is closed yet." "What? No, I'm in the county, at the morgue. Anu has signs of self-harm on her forearms. I know she jumped off the roof." "Davis, don't yell. How am I supposed to know?"
"I know Chief P will be pissed."
"Then tell Phillips the truth."
"Well, that we have a third victim and that it's most likely a serial killer."
Okay. If you can't tell her that, then I'll talk to her."
"Yes.
You might already know the whereabouts of the four models of the..."
"Exactly.
Magnificent Seven."
Yes, I really believe that. Davis, once doesn't count. Twice can be a coincidence. But with a third victim, I... Yes. Thank you. I'll meet you there. Helen hung up and hurried back.
Hey, lady, can I wrap it up again?
The pathologist asked impatiently.
No, this woman is a homicide victim. Get her transferred to us in Manhattan.
Oh, shit. Do you know how much paperwork that means? That's going to give me a lot of work.
Helen smiled at him happily.
And you know what I especially like about it? That it's your pile of work.
With that, she left him standing there.
Thanks for nothing, lady, he shouted angrily after her.
Helen still had the smell of the dead in her nose when she ran into Davis outside the apartment building where Anuradha Appala had lived.
Hey, Helen, a serial killer? Are you sure about that?
He asked. Helen nodded grimly. Victor Adams is definitely not our guy. I'm convinced that the murderer of Inez Diega, Mia Wong, and Anuradha Appala is still out there. Davis pounded his fist angrily on the roof of the car.
Shit, Phil's going to kick our asses, Helen said.
She patted him on the shoulder.
Not if we can stop the bastard from getting another one of the Magnificent Seven. Have you tracked down the whereabouts of the other four?
Two so far. Lauren Gramney and Vivian Lemoire. Both are booked for a shoot here in New York, according to their agency. Catherine Williams and Ella Henson are away. Henson probably in Italy, Williams somewhere here in the States.
Good work.
Helen smiled.
When we're done here, we'll take care of Gramney and Lemoire first. So far, the perpetrator has only been struck in New York. Henson and the Williams are still relatively safe, I hope.
If your hunch is right, Davis replied.
Yes, if I am correct, Helen said.
And if the killer sticks to it, she thought as they climbed the stairs to Apala's apartment. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital audiobook podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.